For those of you that don't know me, my name is Philip. I'm part of the team here at Metro. And that video, if you don't know it, the song Hosier, it was the most streamed song on Spotify in the whole of 2014. That video with Sergei Polunin, the ballet dancer, youngest ever principal ballet dancer with the Royal Ballet, that has been viewed 11 million times on YouTube. And I think actually about 10 million of them is probably me, because it's just an amazing video. But the thing about that, Take Me to Church, it really digs into the topic that we've got to finish off these monthly specials about church. You see, church isn't the kind of thing that no one is talking about. Church is still the thing that has the capacity, the ability to annoy, disturb, disillusion, enrage, and just provoke people. And you probably picked up from that song, it's not the most positive song on church. And in many ways, I can identify with what he's saying. He's basically saying, look, in fact, the story behind the song is that Hosier, a kind of Northern Irish guy, totally disillusioned, having been brought up in the church, disillusioned with what he finds in the church, and decides that he wants to give up on church altogether. But the fact of the matter is that for most of us, there's a need for something spiritual in our lives. Now, I don't know everyone here. I don't know where you've come from. I don't know whether you've been someone who's been brought by a friend. You're a little bit on the outside looking in. And you may feel like this. But this is the fact. We all have a spiritual side of things. So if you look at the church and you say, it's a shrine of lies. It's a deathless death. I don't want to be like some dog worshipping with all these people giving their judgment, sharpening their knives when I try to be vulnerable. I reject all of that stuff. You can do that. But it doesn't change the fact that each one of us, we have a spiritual part inside of us. And so Hosier, he says, I reject this. In fact, he's angry, he's bitter, and he's very cutting about the church. But he doesn't say, that's it, I'm done with church. What he does is what we all need to do. He tries to find something else to fill the gap. And so in the song, he finds a relationship, the person that he loves, my lover. She's my church. Let's worship in the bedroom. She's the one that won't criticize me. She's the one that will accept me as I am. She won't give me some moral absolutes. And so I'll put that side of my need to have a spiritual expression, to be connected with something bigger than myself, I'll put it in relationship. And like I said, I got a lot of time for that, because if anyone is in danger of worshipping their wife, it's me. I love my wife. I could happily buy into that, but I know that, and you've probably got a sneaking suspicion of this as well, it's actually not the most loving thing to do, to put all your hope in another person, to make that other person the one that's responsible for you feeling fulfilled and meaning in your life. It's too much for any one person. And my suspicion is that when we live like that, it doesn't always end the way that we want it to end. And relationships don't always deliver what you think they're going to deliver. And yet there's still something inside of me that says, I'm looking for some kind of church. And if I can't find it in the established church, I'm going to look for it my own way. You may be here, I don't know, maybe you've had a bad experience of church in the past. Maybe you've been a little bit burnt. Maybe you have tried in the past, but someone said some stuff, or you got into a particular situation, or you lost your way, or you got out of the habit. And maybe coming here tonight is a little bit like putting your toe back in the water again. And I think that it's really helpful to be able to take another look at church and think, is this the church that Jesus really wanted when he said, I will build my church? And that's what we've been looking at with this series of Irresistible. If you haven't been here for all of them that we've done over these last few months, you can catch it on our website, woodlandsmetro.church, and you'll see all of them there. But the first one, we basically said that church is Jesus' idea. He invented it. He used the word ecclesia. The word church, as we understand it, actually wasn't in Jesus' thinking. The word he used was a gathering, a movement. So church is a gathering. It's a movement. It's something that's going somewhere. And over the last couple of months, we looked at the who. Who is part of this gathering? And we came to the conclusion that the who is disciples. It's people that want to be fulfilled, and they realize that the best chance of fulfilling is to follow Jesus, to give up everything, if necessary, to pursue him, to become like him. Disciples. And Jesus didn't call to himself just believers who believe a bunch of stuff. Jesus was looking for people who would actually follow him. And the second was actually the how. How do these people relate to one another? And the answer there was love. It's all about love. It's about connecting. And in a sense, church is a kind of place that allows me an opportunity to learn how to love, to learn how to be vulnerable, to learn how to be in a safe environment where I can be loved, I can be myself, I can be open, and I can love others. And it's the best place that you can find to get that kind of deep, intimate relationships that we're all looking for. But today, as we finish, I want to talk about the what. What? In other words, what's the purpose? What is church for? Because if you don't know the purpose, then you'll miss out. In fact, just to expand that even further, what is church good for? Uh-huh, absolutely. anyone here remember the 70s? Do you know? Absolutely nothing. Say it again. We're not going to go there because this is the question. Is church good for anything? Does it have a purpose? Is it something that we should invest our time and energy into? And again, there may be some, and you're here right now, and you think, actually, I feel more like Hosea. I feel like I'm looking at the purpose of the church, and that's what annoys me. It annoys me that they say they're going to do one thing, and they don't deliver. They say they're going to be loving, but they're judgmental. They say they're going to tell you the truth, but it's a shrine of lies. They say they're going to forgive you, but they sharpen their knife. They say that you can have life forever, but it's a deathless death. And it's the reason that they have a purpose that they're not fulfilling that really ticks so many people off. So many people, they look at the church and the church isn't behaving the way they want it to behave. And they think, you're not doing your purpose. And if you're not doing your purpose, then I don't want to have anything to do with you. It's not worth my time. But it may be that there are people here, and you're a believer, you're a follower of Jesus. And actually, the thing of purpose, you'd never really even think about it. You think, well, actually, I'm a disciple. I'm trying to be a disciple of Jesus. I'm trying to follow Jesus. That's a good thing. That's a wonderful thing. And in my church experience, love, that's enough to be in community with people, to be following Jesus, to be able to worship God the Father in a setting like this, to get good Bible teaching. That's enough. But actually, according to Jesus, that's not the purpose of church. And just ask yourself that question. What is the church for? What is the church good for? Because some of us, I think, we've kind of got into the habit of doing church. And if you've been around church for a while, you would have just got into the kind of state where you come to church, you do that, you go through the motions, and you're just used to it. It's just something that happens. But unless we are fulfilling our purpose, we're not good for anything. Unless we're doing what we're supposed to do, we're actually not accomplishing what church is all about. Frankly, I can be a disciple of Jesus on my own. I might even do a better job of it. On my own, I can follow Jesus. I can read a Bible. It's online. It's on my phone. I can follow Jesus. I can read the stuff and I can ask him. I can be filled with the Holy Spirit. And if you want to talk about community and loving and being vulnerable, hey, I could do that with my family. I could do that with my friends. I could do that with my home group. I could do that with a few people. Why do we need this? Why do we need the big thing? Why do we need church? You see, unless you've got the purpose, none of this really makes sense. It's absolutely good for nothing. Say it again. It's good for nothing. I say it's good for nothing. This is not me talking. This is Jesus talking. When Jesus was trying to show his disciples what he wanted them to be and what he wanted them to build, he gathered them together. And Luke, one of the writers of his biography, he records through eyewitness accounts how Jesus gathered a bunch of disciples on a mountainside, sat down on the mountainside, and then whole crowds gathered. And Jesus laid out his manifesto, what he wanted to happen with church, what he wanted his followers to do, and what he wanted them to bring into the world. We call it the Sermon on the Mount. It's really famous. It's a big deal if you're a church person. And Jesus starts with this incredible statement. He says this, "You are the salt of the earth." At which point I go, whoopee-doo, hurrah, great. Who wants to be salt? Put your hands up if you'd like to be salt. Is that like the best thing anyone ever said to you? You meet someone, it's the first date, and they say, hey, you're like salt. Wow, this one's a keeper. You know, what is Jesus saying? It's a really unusual thing to say. You are the salt of the earth. And you need to understand that the context that Jesus is speaking, the early ancient world, that first century experience, salt was like one of the most important things in life. You're talking about a dry, hot, windy, arid environment where the body loses kind of those salts, the electrolytes. And so you need to take salt in to live. You need salt to preserve your food. In other words, it will go off if you don't have salt. And one of the rabbis, they had a famous saying, and it says, the world cannot survive without salt. Because salt was necessary for people to do their everyday life. It was such a big commodity that actually the Romans paid their soldiers in salt, which is why you get the expression, he's not worth his salt. Because that's what you used to pay. I paid you salt. You're not worth your salt. That was a waste of my great salt. But that was the kind of context that Jesus is speaking about. He's saying, you're the salt. You're the thing that the world can't do without. You're the thing which everybody needs. You're the thing which is absolutely vital to life. Not just some kind of I can do without it thing that we've got today, but absolutely necessary. He says, you are the salt of the earth. But if the salt loses its saltiness, how can it be made salty again? Now, this is where we say, what? I mean, when was the last time you were in the kitchen about to make a meal and you got to your salt pot and then you had to say, hey, hon, the salt's gone off. We need more salt. This salt is, salt doesn't go off. Salt doesn't lose its saltiness. I mean, what's going on there? The reason that our experience of salt, the salt doesn't get unsalty is because it's sodium chloride. It's a super stable compound. But what Jesus is talking about, the experience that they had was salt. It would be gathered from places like the Dead Sea. And they'd just gather it together from the shores of the Dead Sea. And what you would have is you'd have a whole bunch of impurities, vegetable matter, gypsum, other stuff mixed in. And it sort of adulterates and dilutes the salt within it. And so within that solution, the salt part actually gets overwhelmed by this other stuff and it literally loses its saltiness and it's no good. And they just throw it onto the ground and they would use it because it was a good kind of compactor and hardener for paths. And so Jesus was saying, look, salt is this incredibly valuable, incredibly necessary commodity that the world cannot live without. But it's possible that you become less salty. And you don't become less salty by leaving something out. Church doesn't become less church-like by the things that we don't do. It becomes less church, less salty by the things that we add in. It's when you put in all this other stuff, all these other impurities. It's when things that shouldn't be in, things that have no place in this mixture, when they get put in, the whole thing starts to lose itself. It starts to go off and it starts to become useless. And he says this, it is no longer good for anything. It's no good. Not good for anything. Church, what is it good for? Well, when it loses its saltiness, absolutely nothing. Say it again. Thank you. It's no longer good for anything, except to be thrown out and trampled underfoot. You know, at least it's then going to do someone some good. It'll be some kind of path. It'd be like gritting the road. But actually, salt is so powerful. And Jesus says to his disciples, to his followers, he says, this is what church is supposed to be. It's supposed to be salt. Salt does two things. One, it stops things going bad. And two, it makes things taste good. That's what church is supposed to do. It's to be a preservative, to stop things going bad. So when you meet without salt, it would go off within 24 hours. But when you cover it with salt, pack it with salt, that thing will stay good. It will not go off. And Jesus is saying, I want a bunch of people. I want people to be following me, living in loving communities. And I want them to be out in the world. Salt is always dispersed. It's always spread. It's always thrown out there. And I want it to be the kind of thing that preserves the world, preserves society, keeps people living well, keeps families together, keeps businesses moral, keeps cities whole, keeps the climate really from going out of kilter with how it should be. I need you to stop things going bad, but I need you to make things taste good. That's the thing about salt. It never attracts attention to itself. You never eat a meal that someone makes you, and you never say to the cook, nice salt. It's delicious salt you've got. No, you say, well, that's a great meal. Why? Because it's got salt in it. Without salt, it's Blandy McBlanderson. It is tasteless. It is useless. But you put the salt in and that allows the natural flavor to come out. And Jesus is saying, look, I'm talking about a church where there's a bunch of people and they're thrown out
into everyday world, into the Monday to Friday daily grind, the 9 to 5, the rat race. And they're in every section and every area and every avenue of society. And they're working in politics and they're working in business and they're working in architecture. And they're cleaning streets and they're educating kids and they're caring for the elderly. And they are there at the school gate and they are there in the agricultural arena. They are at every section of society. And you may not know, salt tends to be invisible. It tends to be in, it doesn't draw big attention to itself, but it makes what it is in taste so much better. You put some Christians, some real, genuine followers of Jesus in the workplace, that becomes a better place to be. You put some genuine Christ followers into a community, into your street, and so things just taste better on that street. And people will never know all the time that it's because of the influence of these people who are bringing a bit of Jesus' life into the situation. But without them, you notice it when they're gone. That's one of the things that we want to do with Metro. We want Metro to be the kind of place, the kind of church, that if you took this out, and I know that we're just starting, we've only had these little monthly ones, we're not really launching yet until September, but our long-term aim is that this is a kind of expression of church in the whole of Woodlands and all its various many facets. Taken out of Bristol, and suddenly people are saying, it's not the same. You know, there's not the same compassion and care for the homeless. There's not the same joy and expression. Now, even things like the 10K, they're not as good because we are not in it. Church is supposed to be salt out there, in the world, invisibly, stopping things from going bad, making things taste good. And then Jesus goes on, and he says something. And it's kind of shocking, because it's the kind of thing which Jesus, well, you know, you feel like Jesus could say about himself, but for Jesus to say it about his followers is really, really shocking. He goes on and he says this, you are the light of the world. Now, I'm going to be honest here. I used to have a massive problem with this verse, and when I was a kid, I used to have really struggle with it. Because I was brought up in church. So I've seen church in and out all my life. I've seen it as a kid, I've seen it as a young adult, I've seen it as an old man. And I've seen church, but I was brought up in church, and I went to Sunday school. And they talked about being the light of the world, and now they meant well. But they taught me this song, and it just freaked me out. It messed me up. This song that they made me sing, I'm like 5 years old, I'm singing this song, I'm terrified of my brain. But it was about the light of the world, and it gave me a kind of little inferiority complex and a kind of weird feeling about this verse for years, because the song, now, some of you will know this, so if you know this, you can sing along with me, you can sing some. But it went like this. I'll do it for you. Jesus bids us shine with a pure, clear, sing with me, like a little candle burning in the night. Is the word you is positive. It's not Jesus saying, I want you to be the light of the world. You need to be the light of the world if you would only just try your best to be the light of the world. No, it's positive. In fact, the way that Jesus uses it, it's emphasis. It's like, you are the light of the world. You, listen. You, I'm talking to you, yes, you. Now, you don't think, but you, it's an emphatic pronoun that Jesus uses. You are the light of the world. You don't have to try to be it, you don't have to strive to be it, you don't have to study to be it, you don't have to aspire to be it, you don't have to hope to be it, you are it. You are a toy, he might have said. You are the light of the world. In fact, we should use that. We should use that Buzz Lightyear thing. You just rap on people's heads saying, you are the light. No, I am not. Yes, you are. Jesus is saying, look, you are. In fact, he uses the same construction when he says about the salt of the earth. You are the salt of the earth. I don't feel like salt. I think it might be paprika. No. You are the salt of the earth. You are the light of the world. But better than that, not only is it positive, but it's plural. In other words, the you, we now have two different words for you, singular and you, plural. If we were Irish, we'd say yous. But we're English and just so we say you, I don't know. But in Jesus' vocabulary, the you was plural. In other words, off the hook, not in my small core anymore, together with the whole body of Christ. That's what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about a gathered expression. And if salt is always individual and distributed and invisible, then light is always about the gathered together impact of the whole. All those individual photons making this incredible impact on the world. And Jesus was saying, it's not about you and you and you and you. It's about you. You are the light of the world. It's shocking because Jesus, in the book of John, he says, I'm the light of the world. And John, when he opens his gospel, he says, the light, giving light to all of mankind, came into the world. And we can get behind that. We can say, yeah, Jesus, I believe in you. And it's absolutely true. But there's something about a kind of reflection, like the moon reflects the sun, where the church, his body, the body of Christ, Jesus says, listen, my spirit is in you. And you are the light of the world. In other words, right now, sitting in the seat that you're sitting in, right now, you're as close as you will get to this side of heaven of being in the presence of Jesus. Because the body of Jesus is the presence of Jesus. Jesus' spirit is here. And Jesus says, you are my body. You are the light of the world. You don't have to try for it. You don't have to go for it. You are it. But it's about you together. And all you need to do is you need to make sure that you're really visible. So he goes on. He says about a town built on a hill cannot be hidden. Neither do people light a lamp and put it under a bowl. In those days, the towns, they were built of white limestone, and they'd be put on a hill because that was easy to defend and it was better conditions to live in. It wasn't so stultifyingly hot as the valleys were. But the town could be seen for miles because it just reflected this incredible glow. He says, that's what the church is like. That's what the church is supposed to be. This is a church fully functional. This is the purpose that I've given for the church, that you're visible, that people can see you. You're a beacon of hope. You're a light on a stand, and you give illumination to everybody. Whether they believe in God, don't believe in God, don't know whether they believe or not. That you are something that is visible for people, that gives hope for people, that gives an example for people, that shows them the way, that shows them what it's all supposed to be about. He says this, they put it on its stand, it gives light to everyone in the house. And he goes on, and this is the good bit. He says this, in the same way, let your light shine before others, that they may see your good deeds and glorify your Father in heaven. He's saying, look, the church, it has a purpose. It's for something. If it doesn't fulfill that purpose, it's no longer authentic. It's no longer good for anything. I'm not interested, Jesus says. I'm not interested in a church that carries my name, that doesn't do these things, that doesn't make things better and stop things getting bad, that doesn't go out and shine in front of people, that isn't this beacon, this incredibly visible, absolutely critical and crucial element in people's lives, whether they believe in it or not. But I'm looking for you to let it shine, let it shine before others, that they may see your good deeds. Everyone say good deeds.
Good deeds.
Very good. Now I'm going to tell you some more interesting Bible stuff. There are two words for good. I'm going to tell you what they are. The first word for good is, for the sake of argument, let me make it simple. Good. Everyone say good.
Good.
Okay. That's not the word that Jesus uses here. The word for good that Jesus uses is not good, but it's good. So, should we try that one together? After me. Good. Try a bit blacker, okay?
Good.
Essentially, the first word, good, it's not a good word. The Greek word is agathon. It just means morally right, pure, worthy. So, picking up litter, writing to BBC, protesting against stuff, good. But the word that Jesus uses, the Greek word is kala, and it means good. It means, literally, beautiful, attractive, pleasing to the eye. And something about it, it's hard to put this into words, but it just fits. It's just like the right thing. It's just art. And Jesus is saying, look, yeah, sure, the good stuff is good, obviously, by definition, but I'm looking for you to do stuff which is just beautiful. I'm looking for not the church to be a bunch of buttoned-up people in black suits carrying a huge, big black Bible under their arm, walking around doing nice things and, you know, all that stuff being good. I'm looking for stuff that when anybody sees it, they'll look at that and they'll just say, oh, good. Oh, that's beautiful. That is just awesome. And when the church does what it's supposed to do, and it looks like it's supposed to look, then that's what you get. You get something which isn't just, yeah, sure, I can recommend that, and I can see that it's a good thing to have. But it's something that you just think, oh, you want to wolf whistle it. You want to applaud. You just take it. It takes your breath away. I remember the first time that we did Love Running. We're going to do Love Running again next year. But the first time that we did it in 2009, we were out there. We started here just down Anchor Road. And that first one was 300 of us. We're in the red t-shirts. Love Running was us as a church running the 10K. So we had a mass entry of 300 people. We're raising money for the poor, the oppressed, and the needy. And it was an amazing thing. And we were unlike any other of the groups there. One, we were like by far the biggest group on the block. And that was before, you know, last year we did it with 600. But then we were just 300, but there was something about it. And there was this one particular guy, and he's running his race. He's not a Christian. He's not a church person. In fact, he's had an experience a little bit like Hosea. He's been in a particular church, an institutional church, and it's burned him. And he's walked away from it because he saw, I don't like these people. I don't like that religious stuff. I don't like organized religion. Count me out. I'm off. And so he's done his own thing, but he's running this race. And he sees these red shirts, and because he's not very fit at the time, but mostly they're overtaking him, and he just sees the thing on the back of their t-shirts, Love Running. Not because we love running, but because we want to see love running. Love with legs, love in action. And so he sees these guys, and they're going past, and they're black, and they're white, and they're young, and they're old. Our oldest runner was 83 years old, Mark Wood Robinson, those of you that know him. And they are fit, and they are fat, and they are everything in between, and they're doing this stuff, and there's an energy and a crackle between them, and they're high-fiving one another, and they're shouting, and not shooting each other. That was in 2011. But they're doing this amazing stuff. He came, he found one of the red shirts at the end. He said, listen, I have to join you. Because you guys look like you're having just the most fun. That's just what he was looking for, is the word beautiful. He says, who are you? This looks like the best running club in the world. And I'm pretty sure if I joined your running club, I would certainly be able to find a girlfriend. That was his motivation. And the person said, my friend, what you're looking at here is the Church of Jesus Christ. And she is beautiful. who's putting it out there. And here we are, a bunch of ragtag misfits, sweating down the portway, doing our best, raising money that's going to change the lives of people in Africa and change the lives of people in Bristol. It's going to release people who are in chains of bondage and addiction. It's going to make a difference to women who are caught up in the sex trade. It's going to be such good. This is the church, and this is what the church does, and it's supposed to be out there in the world. It's supposed to be visible, and you can see it. And no matter who you are, where you are, what your background is, what your kind of prejudices are, you can have something in front of you, visible, a light on a stand. They said, it's the church. I probably didn't say it in those words, but that's my interpretation of what they said. And what he said was, oh, nuts. I just walked away from this thing. But that evening, he was in church, and he's been there ever since. And yeah, I did get to marry him to his now wife, and I did get to dedicate their child, and I did get to baptize him, I did get to see him grow, and many hundreds and thousands like him. Why? Because Jesus says, you are the light of the world. You are it. You don't have to try, you already are, because I am in you, my spirit is in you, and you're looking to follow me. And this is the big idea that I want to pull out of our last time today. And it's this, is the big idea, this is my point. So if you zoned out before, this is a bit that you just need to take away with you. The big idea is this: when a church looks like Jesus and does what Jesus does, it's beautiful and it changes the world. When it doesn't look like Jesus looks and it doesn't do what Jesus does, it's tasteless and it is irrelevant. And that is really what we are looking to create here. Woodlands is a church that's been going for over 30 years. Got to the point now where we've spilled out of our latest building and we're meeting here, and we're going to continue meeting in places until we are a light on a stand, a city on a hill, a visible beacon of hope, salt in the world which is dispersed, which is out there, making a difference in social enterprise, making a difference in the justice community, making a difference to the people that are marginalized and alienated and poor and hopeless and homeless, making a difference to the rich and the empowered and those that are the visionaries and the decision makers and the movers and the shakers, that we are at every single strata and layer of society, and that we're looking like Jesus and we're doing what Jesus does in a way that is beautiful, attractive, but bit by bit we're changing the world. And when we talk about measure, we've done this in these different services so far. We've talked about what we're trying to do. We're trying to create a church you can bring a friend to. So we're willing to, you know, we're willing to adapt if we have to adapt. Just tweak things if we need to tweak things. To make this the kind of environment that you can bring a friend to, whether you're a person of faith or not. We've talked about how we want to do that. We want to be real and relevant and refreshing. We want it to be authentic, but we want it to have relevance to everyday life. But we want it to have that kind of nice, unexpected surprise. But we haven't told you why we want to do that. What I want to do now is I want to tell you why we want to do this, why we're doing this, what our motivation is. It's not just to keep the show on the road. It's not just to perpetuate some kind of institutionalized machine. We're doing this because we have a vision. We have a mission. And the vision that we have as a church is this. We exist to help people find and follow Jesus. That means to find Jesus in the first place and then to follow him. Mobilizing them to love and serve their city. When we say mobilize, that means that we actually have to do it. When we were first as a team talking about the vision, the first words that we put in was equipping people to love and to serve their city. And then someone pipes up and says, you know what? Probably most of us already are equipped, but are we doing it? Not necessarily so. We need to be mobilized. We actually need to, I need someone to take a lead with me. I need someone to give me a prod, to give me some encouragement, to give me a push, to give me an opening, to give me an opportunity. I need to be mobilized. I need someone to call me out and say, come on, Philip, let's do this together. And so that's what we're about. And that's what we aspire to be. And this is just the very foothills of it. This is just the very beginning. This is the shallows. This is the training pool. But we, when we start in September the 6th, we will give ourselves tirelessly to this mission to be the followers of Jesus that make Jesus happy. Not the ones that are good for nothing, who are just trapped in some religious bubble where we're doing our best to love God, love one another, but it makes no difference to the world. We want to make things taste good. We want to stop things going bad. We want to be a light and a hope. We want to be visible. And I can tell you, we have got some things lined up for this thing. It would make the hairs on the back of your neck stand up. We have got partnerships that we're working on to help make a difference with women caught in the sex trade. And we are looking to make a difference to people, whether they are young entrepreneurial business people, or whether they're just starting out as students, or whether they're trying to put a family together, or whatever it is. But we're looking to do something which is good. That anybody, it's self-evident. You may not agree with me, you may not believe in God, but you could applaud, you could stand back, and you could say, that's beautiful. That is just genuinely right. It fits absolutely perfectly. When Jesus started the church, he said this. He said, I will build my church. The gates of Hades will not overcome it. I will give you the keys of the kingdom of heaven. Whatever you bind on earth will be bound in heaven. Whatever you loose on earth will be loosed in heaven. And Jesus is saying, well, look, the church, my ecclesia, my gathering, it's about people who are following Jesus, becoming like him. It's about people who are living in loving community with one another. And it's about people who are making a difference in the world, transforming society. But look, you know that the world is in a mess, but Jesus tells you, you can't do this just with ordinary human effort. We've got thousands of years of human effort, and it's the blood-spattered manuscript of misery. But Jesus says, to my church, I'm going to give you some keys. And these keys are the keys of heaven. Help you unlock heaven and bring it down to earth. We need some heaven. Am I right? And so this is the question. Are you in? Are you in? You may not be someone that even knows whether you believe fully in all of this stuff. You may be just testing it out. Or maybe you're kind of trying to find your way back and you're still a little bit skeptical and you're thinking, well, you know, he talks a good talk, but let's see the... Well, look, are you in? Are you willing to go on a bit of a journey with us? Because when we start in September, we're going to be gunning for this. We have high hopes and great ambitions because we serve a wonderful, amazing, beautiful God. We're looking for people who are willing to give themselves to following Jesus, to becoming more like him. We're looking for people who are able to live in vulnerability with one another, learning how to love and let that love radiate out into the world. And we're looking for people who say, absolutely, absolutely, positively, I am willing to step out, to put my head on the chopping block, to get my hands dirty, to make a difference in this world, to be out on the streets, to be out within my own, my life and my job and my relationships and my community. I'm going to be salt, but I'm going to be part of the light. And together we are going to shine. We're going to shine and we're going to change the world. I'd like to pray before I hand back to the guys. But what I'd like you to do, if you haven't already done, if you say, yeah, I think I might be in, I want you simply just to take the card, the welcome card that's on your chair or under your chair, and the pen, and just FYI, it was put there, every single one of them, every single pen and every single card was put there by John, the guy at the beginning who gave his story. Because Jesus transformed his life. And I look at what John is doing, I look at what God has done in his life, and I say, it's good. It's beautiful. It's good. I would like you to take that card. I'd just like you to give us your details. If you're a Woodlands person, then I'd just like you to do it anyway. If you think, yeah, I would like to identify and I would like to join you in on a journey. You're not committing yourself to anything for life, but you're just saying, yeah, I think I'd like to take the next few steps with you. But if you're not someone that's currently in church, if you're not connected in a meaningful way, you know, maybe you come along, you do the odd service, then you particularly, I want you to fill that in and I want you to tell us as much about yourself as you can. Fill in all the questions. And then come and find Alex and Claire at the end, and they'll be just at the back where the drinks are on the sofas, and they'll give you one of our fancy coffees that pay for your parking if you park in Millennium Square, and they'll just help you take those first steps of connection. But I'd like to fill in those cards just so that we've got an idea of who's with us at this initial phase while the band are playing. But right now, what I want us to do is I want us to pray. I want us to pray that Jesus will build his church out of our volunteer in this city. So let's pray. Loving Lord Jesus, we thank you that even though you yourself could have stayed here on this earth, you chose to leave a body of a different kind. You chose to call ordinary men and women messed up, broken, down, confused, hopeless, ordinary people, and turn them into the salt of the earth, the light of the world. And God knows the world can't live without salt. The world can't live without something that stops it going bad and something that helps it taste good. And the world is caught in darkness where there's confusion and people don't know where to turn or how to do life or how to make a difference. And all the problems we have, they seem so intractable. But I pray, dear God, that you'd make us into the light that you've called us to be. I pray that we would know your grace. And I want to pray that there would be little fires ignited here tonight where we catch a vision, a glimpse of glory, the wonderful mission you've called us to be in with you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.